Auckland paediatricians are concerned about the long-term health effects on the rising number of children, some as young as 10, presenting with type 2 diabetes. Research looking at 21 years of patient records from Starship's Paediatric Diabetes Service has shown an increasing number of Auckland primary school-aged children and teenagers developing the disease. Type 2 diabetes is more likely to develop in adults and is linked to lifestyle factors. And the first childhood cases in New Zealand were identified in the 1990s. The rates of young Pasifika and Māori affected are 18 times higher than that of Pākehā. Shortly we'll hear from Dr. Twila Percival. She's a consultant paediatrician for Kids First Children's Hospital in South Auckland, a senior lecturer at the University of Auckland Medical School and also board director for the Pasifika Medical Association. But first we welcome Starship paediatric endocrinologist Craig Jeffries, who says his latest research has confirmed that there's a worrying, slow and steady increase in the number of children diagnosed. Dr. Jeffries says if type 2 diabetes is picked up early, it can be managed, or with greater awareness of diet and exercise, it can actually be prevented. Craig, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
10 seems very young to be developing type 2 diabetes. Can you tell us what you are seeing at Starship?
So, historically, the majority of diabetes in children is type 1 or autoimmune. We found over the last 20 years or so just a slow, steady increase in type 2 diabetes. Quite a different group. The risk factors really are that they're in early puberty or established puberty. They've normally got a strong family history of diabetes. And they're relatively big. They're normally in the overweight range. They're certainly not the biggest kids that we see around the schools. And we're getting around 10 to 15 new cases per year, which is quite worrying. And 20 years ago when I started, I'm a bit older now, it would be very rare to see a type 2 diabetic present. And now we'd get one every couple of months. These are lovely families, but they've often got diabetes riddled through their family history. And unfortunately, often they've got very early complications in their adults or siblings.
Is it quite possibly being undiagnosed as well?
It could be. We run the Starship Diabetes Service, so we're the catchment for all types of diabetes. So we don't go out and screen. So they've got to be reasonably symptomatic or they've got to be picked up because GPs are worried about weight or skin infections or family history. I think we don't miss too many, but certainly we're picking up an established number now.
What are the symptoms?
Well, we've worked out that half of them come in classically like they've got type 1 diabetes, they're losing weight, they're thirsty, they're getting up at night to pee. But more recently, half of them picked up a bit earlier, so they tend to be just not quite right, or they're getting boils, or the GP has just randomly done a blood sugar because they've ticked the box.
You mentioned that this is multifactorial when it comes to risk, even in this young age group. Could you tell us a bit more about the relevance of family history and or a genetic, if there's any kind of genetic link?
Yeah, there is a strong genetic link, much more than type 1. They've almost always got a first-degree relative with type 2 diabetes. And one of the strongest links we find is a history in the mum of gestational diabetes, she needing insulin. So often they're the third or fourth child in the family, and mum's gone from normal and for the first pregnancy to insulin in the fourth. So it's the younger children we're tending to see. So we think there is an element of what we call programming for type 2 diabetes, which is why when they get older, they hit puberty, they might carry more weight than their peers. They really can't produce enough insulin to cope with that.
Can there be also a link with mum who has gestational diabetes? And does it depend how strong that is as to the likelihood of the child developing?
Yeah, so normally if the mum's just on diet, gestational diabetes, the children are fairly normal at birth. We don't see many like that when they're older. It's normally the mum who's on insulin and the baby is born very large or has some complications in the newborn period because they're very big. So gestational diabetes on insulin is still a fairly significant portion of the population. And we, at the moment, don't target those for follow-up or review, and we probably need to be a bit more proactive in that area.
Is there also among different ethnicities a greater risk factor that is perhaps genetic?
Yes, certainly. So 60 to 70% are Pacific Island or Maori now. We very rarely see a European family. They don't seem to have the right genetic risk for that. We do see quite a number now of Chinese and Asian Indian families, again, with the same sort of risk factors, though, gestational diabetes, type 2 diabetes and overweight. The number of type 2 Maori has actually stable. The Pacific Island group is increasing and the Asian Indian group is increasing. Saying that, these are small numbers. They are the real tip of the iceberg. These are children at the age of 10 or 12 who metabolically have a disease that most 50 or 6-year-olds can't cope with.
What are the implications if not treated?
Very good question. The biggest risk is heart disease and kidney disease. And we know that these come from families sometimes where the parents are already on dialysis in their mid-30s. And these children are getting their diabetes 2 decades earlier. So we're extremely worried that kidney troubles, heart disease is going to hit these young people in their mid-20s, early 30s, which is probably 2 or 3 decades prior to the previous generation.
And with intervention and treatment, what happens?
Well, there's a number of families who do extremely well, who really take on board the risk. They're trying to lose weight. Even a 5 or 10% weight loss is very beneficial from a glucose point of view. We've got some very good medications. There's some online that Pharmac is considering to fund, which will be very good for heart and kidney protection. Their tablets, at the moment we're stuck with insulin as a very much mainstay, and no one likes taking insulin, especially if you're a teenage child. So we're hoping that the new medications come through, get funded, and we can use them in this group.
Is it reversible?
We have a group of adults who
have
bariatric surgery or weight loss surgery, but that's not usually an option for children.
Is it reversible?
Type 2 diabetes is really insidious. You've got to lose a lot of weight and keep it off for a very long time. I don't think that many people would say you ever completely cure type 2 diabetes. But yes, it is reversible early on with some good management.
Is it preventable? We have talked about some of the risk factors that a child may have, end of story. But is it preventable?
Well, actually, the real prevention goes right back to treating and preventing gestational diabetes for a number of these families, which is an area that I know is people are looking at strongly, and then preventing increased weight in children early on. And I know that the B4 checked, which is where they look at weight and growth at four-year-olds, is showing a decline in BMI, which may well be something we see an effect in 5 or 10 years in this age group. So one, preventing gestational diabetes, and two, preventing them putting on weight in the first 4 to 5 years is probably crucial.
What is it that you're calling for? Do you believe the emergence and now the growing number of these cases at such a young age requires a wider response?
I think we do need some national surveillance for this. We've got a group of paediatricians like myself around the country are starting to get together and form a registry for diabetes for other reasons. But, you know, knowing what's happening long-term is vital. The second one really is from us that we pick it up earlier, because that's the point that we're not actually doing actively. So the current guidelines we've just published with Australia, New Zealand, is that high-risk factor children get a GP check and a glucose check from 10 years of age annually. So that message probably needs to get out straight away.
Stay with us if you're able to, Craig. I do appreciate that. Dr. Twila Percival, as I mentioned earlier, is a consultant paediatrician for Kids First Children's Hospital, senior lecturer for the University of Auckland Medical School, and is a board director for the Pacifica Medical Association. Twila, welcome. Thank you very much for your time.
Morning.
What is your view on this and experience of this, of more children being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes?
Well, I think as Craig has said, we're seeing an increase, and what we're seeing in children is mirroring what we're seeing in adults. So there's an increase in adults, there's also a massive increase in children. But the whole concern we have with type 2 diabetes is it's being driven by our big rise in obesity, which we know is a major problem in New Zealand and globally as well. So for me, we can certainly, as Craig says, we do need to screen more actively and pick children up earlier, but we also need to be really more focused on how do we address obesity, which is driving this type 2 diabetes major sort of epidemic, really.
We've discussed the gestational diabetes and how that can affect the child's risk factors, but are the children themselves, again, with families you're working with, are you seeing children themselves with obesity issues that may be directly affecting their risks?
Absolutely. I mean, when you look at the communities now, the prevalence of obesity in all age groups has dramatically increased over the last decade. And so, as Craig says, the uterine environment can sort of pre-program children to gain weight excessively in the early years and then have less insulin production probably later on. But the issue, I guess, is if we're going to address this problem, we need to think about obesity across the family and across the community. So, yes, gestational diabetes is important, but it's important in our adults, it's important in our kids. We can't just pick one group. And one of the issues with health interventions is we tend to do what we're comfortable with. So we bite off a chunk. So I'll do a bit of biomedical something with this group of people, and that's what I know. But really, to address obesity and type 2 diabetes, we need to take a whole country approach, you know, from what the government says to what we have with our food marketing companies, to what's in our environments, to what's in our schools, to what our families do. So as doctors, we need to move beyond just doing biomedical stuff, which is what we're sort of trained in, and think much bigger than just what we see in our clinics and hospitals.
Twila, are you saying in the last decade even, you have seen a noticeable increase in obesity rates? We know this is a phenomenon worldwide, including in New Zealand over the last three decades or so, I think from around the mid-90s particularly. But are you seeing a noticeable difference even in the last decade?
Yes, definitely. I think, it's most marked when you think about, for me, when I was growing up, you know, the body habitus of my cohort of school children, which isn't a decade ago, obviously it was many decades ago, but when you look at photographs of the change in school children over the decades, you'll see this dramatic increase in the body habitus, increasing obesity as we go through the decades. So it's a phenomenon that's happening all over the world, and we're seeing it clinically as well.
When you look at the inputs to that, as you say, when you step back and look at it, not just as a medical condition to be diagnosed and treated, but you look at what we're discussing now, which is a phenomenon that even in the last decade has grown apace, what is on your mind? What are the responses from various places that you believe the situation demands? If we're not going to see a whole, you know, growing number of children affected... Mm.
So the first thing is, I think, to pick up on Craig's point, which is the medical things we need to do better. So we need to work with whole families and actively screen, pick people up early. I think what Craig says is absolutely important, because we can manage type 2 diabetes if we pick things up early. So work with the whole family. Don't just wait till people present symptomatically. So what Craig says is really important. The second thing is prevention. So there we look at our food environment in New Zealand. We know from studies that our food environment is unhealthy, and it's also unequitable in the way that it's unhealthy. So if we look at lower socioeconomic communities, you'll find they have more what we call food swamps. So food swamps are neighbourhoods where you have fast food outlets, junk food outlets, you have less healthy food. So when you look at the New Zealand food environment, you have more food swamps in poorer areas. So that's predominantly where you get Pacific people living. So we're living in environments with a poor food environment as well. More junk food, less healthy food. the other thing we see in New Zealand with our food environment is the food policy implementation is very limited. So less than half of our schools have nutrition food policies. So we're not thinking about what are we doing in our environments enough from a policy point of view. So I guess I'm thinking about how do we make the environment that we live in a healthier food environment. And even things like, they've done studies where they look at how supermarket shelves are stocked. And if you go to poorer communities, the studies show that the supermarket shelves are stocked with more unhealthy food in poorer suburbs. Now, we need to turn that around because it's not good enough for our at-risk, vulnerable, poorer communities to be in poorer food environments. So there's a lot we need to do in our planning and how we design our food environment. And a lot of that, of course, is going to be driven by food companies and, I guess, council and government policy.
We've been round the traps on this one a few times, Twila, whether it was fruit in schools or some schools moving to, say, water only being provided. We've had endless debates over sugar taxes and over advertising rules and whether there's sufficient location of fast food outlets and other outlets near schools. And there's always pushback. But when you look at what you are now seeing in children with type 2 lifestyle-driven diabetes, yes, agreed again, we've already said there can be ethnic predispositions or genetic predispositions, and there certainly can be predispositions from maternal diabetes. But when you look at what you are seeing now appearing in children, what is your message to those who have pushed back and pushed back over and over again?
My message is we need to focus, put children at the centre of this. So the children aren't determining the poor food environment around their school. You know, the children don't determine that. Other people do. And if we keep allowing food companies and others to push back, our children are going to suffer. So we need to stand up and have this battle, and it is a battle. But we can get there. You know, look how we've done with smoking. Look how the policy and the environment around smoking has changed over the last decade and a half. So why can't we just, we need to keep on with this battle to get there for children. I think it'll be much, much harder. But as you say, we've been around the traps with this, but we just need to keep on with that.
There are no drugs per se for young children, is that right, for treating type 2 diabetes?
Well, Craig's better to talk about that, but I think we're just using the adult ones like metformin and insulin. So
Craig, there's no specific drugs for children, is that correct?
No, we're using the cheap adult drugs in younger children. There are some very new expensive ones coming online that we'd love to be able to use early on in these children who much better benefit, especially for kidney protection.
Is it the case there's no drugs for children because it's actually so rare for children to have type 2 diabetes in the world? So there's been no drive for a program?
Yes, the pharma studies struggle to give studies under 18 because it's so rare and they're such a difficult group to do these studies in. But they're really adults in younger bodies. You know, these children will benefit from the drugs that we'd normally use. The other we actually have is a lot of the what we call risk calculators, 5-year risk of heart attack, etc. They're not going to fit for a 12-year-old child. But the drug itself is extremely good. So we just probably need to prioritise diabetes in children and say, even under 25, you know, there's very few of them in reality, and let's give them the best treatment available.
Twila, could I ask about some programs or interventions, particularly perhaps community-led initiatives or Pacifica Health-led initiatives? I'm aware of some of these. Are they having an impact? And is this something else that needs to be supported? There's the sort of the regulatory top-down marketing approach, which, as we said, has had a lot of pushback. But are there other approaches that are showing promise?
There's lots of community-based approaches with diabetes and particularly obesity. So church-based programs around exercise and healthy nutrition. Pacific Heartbeat's got some very good resources for healthy eating, and we have programs out in the community. There's a great one in Otara called Rush Hour, which is three times a week. People get together at 6 o'clock in the morning and exercise, and they also have advice on healthy nutrition as well. And I think there's some great GP-based, sort of family-based interventions around working with the whole family as opposed to just individual patients, which I think is it's a very important thing for diabetes to... If you have one person in the family with diabetes, you should take the whole family and screen everybody and start that sort of lifestyle work with the family really early. So there's lots of specific programs like that work with the whole family, sort of a whānau ora kind of approach, which I think for diabetes is a good sort of model to use.
Thank you both. Thanks very much. Tuila Percival speaking there, consultant paediatrician for Kids First Children's Hospital in South Auckland, also senior lecturer at University of Auckland Medical School, also board director for the Pacifica Medical Association. And thanks also to Starship paediatric endocrinologist Craig Jeffries.